works equally well at home. You don't need any special equipment or lots of space. Just a couple of small tubs or pots on a windowsill can be enough to accommodate an impressive crop. Cooking food. The logical follow-on from growing food is cooking it. Once again, research has shown that getting hands-on with food during cookery lessons at school results in better outcomes than classroom-based education. These outcomes are better still if the children have also been involved in growing the ingredients that they are cooking with. Cooking helps children on a sensory level, so that they become familiarized with foods through touch, sight, and smell, as well as taste. Plus, their hands-on involvement can help to reduce picky eating and neophobia. Learning to cook is one of the most important skills to teach children. While they may not need to know algebra as adults, or remember what they learned about the First World War in school, they will use the skills gained in cookery classes daily. But teaching children how to cook is not something that should be reserved for school. As parents, it is one of the most valuable ways in which you can spend your time if you're concerned about their eating. Shopping for food. If children aren't growing the food that they eat, the next best thing is involving them in shopping for it, ideally at a farmer's market. By meeting the farmers, children can feel more involved in the history of the food that they will be consuming, and helping to select the food they will eat gives them a degree of control that they don't ordinarily have. With their large halls and good outside space, schools provide a perfect location for local farmers' markets, and bringing the sale of food to the children, perhaps immediately after school or at a weekend when parents can be present to buy, empowers them to shop for the food that they will eat. Research considering the impact of school-based farmers' markets has found that they result in an improved attitude towards food in children, as well as an increased consumption of fruit and vegetables, which would surely be compounded if the children were then involved in the preparation of that food as well. If your child's school is unable or reluctant to introduce these measures, a good option is to meet with the PTA, Parent-Teacher Association, to discuss the idea of parents running an after-school club to take up these activities. At my daughter's school, parents run a very busy and successful gardening and cookery club each week. Sticks and stones, weight and teasing. There are several things schools can do to improve the messages they give to children concerning health and eating, and parents can help in the development of healthier policies. What schools and parents will always struggle to control, however, is the impact of other children. Teasing and bullying about weight have always existed, and their impact is far greater than most people realize. Even if you don't believe that your child is being teased, or is indeed teasing others, it is still important to understand the implications, because we never quite know everything that is happening in the lives of our children. Weight-related teasing is an unfortunate reality for many children, with school being the most common place for it to occur, across all ages. It affects both girls and boys, with overweight girls being 4 times more likely to be teased by their peers than boys, while overweight boys who are teased are alarmingly far more likely to become bullies themselves than their non-overweight peers. Children who are teased about their weight are also more likely to be excluded by their peers, both in class and in the playground. We must ask the question, are these children the target of teasing solely because of their weight, or is the excess weight a symptom of a social or emotional issue that causes them to struggle to interact with their peers, something that would still exist, and perhaps be the target of teasing, even if they were not overweight? If so, this would mean that these children are hyper-vulnerable to bullying and friendship issues. Research has shown that children who are teased by their peers are more likely to struggle with emotional eating, which makes sense, because when children feel sad and hurt by the teasing, they turn to the one thing that they know will temporarily make them feel better – food. Children who are teased by their peers for their weight are also considerably more likely to be depressed and perform significantly worse than their peers academically too. And the effects of being teased about weight in childhood unfortunately don't dissipate in adulthood either. Research has found that adults who were teased for their weight as children are appreciably more likely to have disturbed eating behaviours than their peers who were not. Teasing has serious and long-lasting effects, and is not something that can be ignored. It is not enough to talk to your child about the teasing and tell them to ignore it. Sticks and stones hurt, but so do words, perhaps even more so. The teasing must be stopped. To facilitate this, you must foster a relationship with your child that enables them to talk to you about anything. This means listening quietly and earnestly, and not replying with stock phrases such as, "Don't be silly, just ignore them." Explain to your child that you want to help, that they shouldn't have to put up with the teasing, and that you will speak to their teachers. It is important that your child has faith that you can help them. Keep a written record of the teasing, making a note of when it happened, who was involved and what was said, as well as any adults your child spoke to about it. Next, request a meeting with your child's form teacher to discuss the teasing and ask them what they plan to do to resolve the problem. If this does not achieve results, your next step is to request a meeting with the school head or principal. If this meeting again is unsatisfactory, then your next step is to make a complaint to the school's Board of Governors. Take notes at all meetings and keep them safe, along with any correspondence. The school has a duty to resolve your issue. If, after you've taken all the above steps, it still fails to do so, then sadly, your only alternative may be to look for a new school. What should you do if you find that your own child is teasing others because of their weight? First, you must ascertain whether they are being bullied. Bullies are often bullied themselves. If this is the case, you must work with them to stop it. Hopefully, once the cause has been removed, the symptoms will naturally disappear. If your child isn't being bullied, then your role is to help them to understand how their teasing makes others feel. Young children do not have especially advanced empathy skills and often don't realize the impact of their behavior. You may find that an online video explaining bullying from the perspective of the victim works much better than just a conversation. Alternatively, a simple and striking visual way to explain the effects of bullying is to get a piece of paper and screw it up. Tell your child, "This is me bullying the paper. Can you see I have hurt it by screwing it up?" Next, say to your child, "Now I'm going to stop being mean to the paper. I'm going to open it up and smooth it out. This is me saying I'm sorry." Open the paper and show it to your child. Ask them, "Does the paper look the same to you? Or does it look different from how it did before I screwed it up? Can you see all the lines and creases?" That's what bullying does. It doesn't matter if you're sorry and apologize. It doesn't make the pain go away. There are always lasting marks. Tell them that teasing hurts. Everybody has feelings, and teasing may cause permanent damage if it continues. This works really well for children of all ages. Changes in body image and confidence. Shocking research shows that girls start to have concerns about their bodies and begin dieting as young as 6 years of age, with awareness and consideration of dieting increasing with age. Interviews with girls aged 6 and 7 found that they rated their ideal figure as significantly thinner than their current frame. As children approach puberty, it is natural that they become more conscious of their bodies. However, for some, particularly girls, this is a dangerous time. Girls who perceived themselves as overweight before puberty began, even if they weren't, showed significantly worse body image and disordered eating than those who did not. While boys are not immune from the emotional effects of puberty and body image issues, girls are significantly more likely to struggle and experience disordered eating and eating disorders as a result. When asking why this is, we cannot ignore the impact of the media and advertising. Young girls today are exposed to increasingly unrealistic portrayals of body shapes and sizes, from the non-existent waists and hips of the dolls they play with to the overtly sexual clothing of underweight young female pop singers. Pictures and stories in magazines intended for preteen girls bombard them with imagery and ideas that undoubtedly give rise to body anxiety and unacceptance. Research into 300 6-9-year-old girls found that this exposure to sexualized media correlated with girls internalizing sexualized messages, which, in turn, caused them to be more likely to develop a negative body image. Girls today are faced with more of these inappropriate images and messages than any generation in the past. It is a ticking time bomb. If we want our girls to grow up to feel good about themselves and have a positive relationship with their bodies and with eating, we must do something, and quickly. raising girls with a positive body image. The first thing to do is to try to lessen the negative impact of the media on children by reducing exposure as much as possible. This means avoiding the magazines and videos that portray unrealistic ideals, monitoring internet usage, and restricting access to social media channels, in particular until the teen years. Next, arguably the most important influence on young girls when it comes to body image and eating habits, is their mother. Researchers found that a mother's behavior and her feelings about her own body have a direct impact on her daughter's body image and dieting behavior. In Chapter 2, I outlined the importance of exorcising your own eating demons so as not to pass on your beliefs to your children. This is even more important if you have a daughter. To raise a daughter with a healthy body image, you must work on your own, avoiding dieting and making sure that the messages you are giving out are positive. There are several other ways in which you can increase the chances that your daughter will feel good about herself and reduce the likelihood that she will develop disordered eating. Do you comment when you see somebody who is particularly large or skinny? Or do you praise others for their weight loss? Be mindful of how you speak about others and avoid commenting on their bodies. Avoid praising your daughter for her looks. Compliment her on what she does and what she achieves in life, not what she looks like. Help your daughter to understand puberty and what is or will be happening to her, preferably well in advance of it starting. Help her to frame puberty and the impending changes to her body in a positive way, and be open and honest with her, so she feels able to ask you anything. I began speaking to my own daughter about puberty when she was 7, in order that she would be well prepared and relaxed when it started to happen. Implement a way of communicating in writing, so she can ask you questions she may be too shy to ask face to face. My daughter and I had a journal we could both write in, exchanging personal and potentially embarrassing messages to each other. Expose your daughter to good examples of positive body image. Think about the messages in the television programs, films, or online videos she watches and in the books that she reads. Try to find a heroine for her to look up to. Help your daughter to spot unrealistic portrayals of female bodies. Look at images together and watch videos about Photoshop manipulation. Choose dolls with realistic body shapes. This means the most popular dolls are out, unfortunately. Barbie and Bratz in particular. Avoid cosmetics and beauty products targeted at children and ask friends and relatives not to purchase them for your daughter as presents. Choose clothes for little girls, not mini women. Try to find retailers that sell roomy clothes, not skimpily cut ones, and talk about the comfort and practicalities of clothing, rather than the aesthetics. Choose books with powerful female role models, in which girls are portrayed as capable, strong, clever, and funny, rather than just pretty and popular. Encourage a hobby, especially one that involves regularly meeting with their peers, such as guiding, or playing a musical instrument in a band. Find a way in which your daughter can enjoy moving her body. For instance, cycling, swimming, climbing, or dancing. Place the emphasis on how much fun and how healthy it is to move and how strong her body is, rather than on how she looks. Focus on gratitude. Help your daughter to recognize how lucky she is to have a strong and healthy body. While there is no denying that the pre-teen years can be significantly harder for girls than they are for boys, the above also applies to those raising sons, particularly if they are having doubts over their bodies and their self-worth based on their looks. When your child is overweight. Children are significantly more likely to become overweight as they approach the teen years. Obesity levels in the UK rise sharply from 9% at age 5 to 19% at age 11. Diagnosis of obesity is controversial sometimes, though, especially when it comes from school weight monitoring. School weight monitoring schemes focus on children's body mass index, BMI, a measurement that calculates ideal weight based on height. However, this may not be the best way to diagnose obesity in children, despite the fact that it is commonly used. It takes no account of an individual child's build or muscle mass. It also ignores something known as central adiposity, or fat carried around the tummy and hips, which has a significantly more important impact on a child's future health than that distributed more evenly over the body. But while school weight monitoring may be unreliable because of the focus on BMI, research finds that parents often don't admit their child has a weight problem when they do. If you do feel that your child is overweight, what should you do, or perhaps more importantly, not do? Let's start with what you shouldn't do. As we have already seen several times, scientists have consistently found that if parents attempt to control their children's eating, taking an authoritarian approach, they are more likely to be overweight. The same applies when children are overweight and parents are seeking ways to help them lose weight. The more you try to control their eating, the more likely they are to gain weight, not lose it, and develop eating problems for the rest of their lives. Research looking at children between 5 and 7 years of age has found that when parents place firmer limits on eating, children are more likely to eat in the absence of hunger. In other words, restricting food or placing a child on a diet has the reverse effect to that intended, making them eat more and override their satiety signals. Further research shows that when parents prohibit their children from eating snacks, they eat significantly more, and importantly, they desire the banned food much more than children who are not restricted. Putting your child on a diet is a very strong no-no, according to science. Does this mean that you should just ignore your child's weight? There is an argument for this. Not making an issue of it is perhaps the healthiest way to help them to regain control of their eating habits. And the principles of gentle eating once again apply here. Help your child to be mindful of their eating, to understand the difference between hunger and appetite, encouraging them to be aware of their body's signs of satiety. Respect that they are able to recognize these cues in their own bodies and the choices they make when following them. Reduce distractions around eating and place boundaries on where it happens, never in front of a screen, for instance. Help your child to develop non-food-related strategies to cope with their emotions, such as downloading a mindfulness relaxation recording for children, or buying them a stress ball to squeeze when they feel anxious or angry. Once again, focusing on developing a positive body image is key. Help your child to realize that they are not their weight and should never define themselves by it. Keep a check on your parenting, making sure that your approach to your child's eating is authoritative and not authoritarian, and try to resist stepping in and taking control or placing limits on what your child eats. Finally, empower your child to enjoy moving their body again, just as they did in early childhood. Find something that your child enjoys and place the emphasis on just that, enjoyment, not getting fit or losing weight. Taking part in an activity with them can turn it into something far more fun, such as going on a family bike ride, hiring a badminton court for the whole family at your local leisure centre every weekend, or going on a hike together for the day. These family activities will have benefits over and above the movement and exercise, bringing you closer together and enabling your child to open up to you more about their anxieties and concerns, which, in turn, will reduce their need for emotional eating. When your child is underweight. While obesity and overweight are the most significant weight concerns in school-age children, some do struggle with being underweight, and picky eating often remains a challenge throughout childhood. Parenting an underweight child can be just as hard as parenting one who is overweight, and despite their seeming like very different problems, the advice remains very similar if there is no underlying medical issue. Once again, gentle eating principles top the list of advice. Empower your child to be mindful about their eating, particularly paying attention to their hunger cues and not missing them because of distractions. Allow your child to take some control over their eating, approaching food in an authoritative, not authoritarian, manner. Respect that your child's choices are in order. If your child remains a picky eater, then the advice is the same as coping with picky eating in toddlerhood and the preschool years. Familiarize them with different foods with repeated exposure, involving them in growing, choosing, preparing, and cooking meals with you. Take any pressure away. Don't force your child to eat, reward or praise them for eating, and especially, don't admonish them for not eating. Trust your child to follow their own bodily cues and accept their likes and dislikes by giving them control over what they eat. Following these steps may not produce fast results, but they will, ultimately, lead to the healthiest outcome for your child. In the meantime, you may consider a good quality vitamin and mineral supplement if you feel that your child is not getting enough nutrition from their diet. Most children who are underweight are entirely healthy, and their weight may be something that will gradually change over time, although some will stay slight for their whole life. Again, not everybody is average, and it's okay for some to be smaller than others. A small minority of underweight children do, however, have an underlying medical condition. As a parent, your instinct is valuable here. If you intuitively feel that something is wrong and there is a reason for your child's low weight, trust yourself and push for investigation with your family doctor. My firstborn, the one-time picky eater, suddenly became very underweight after starting school, despite overcoming his pickiness and starting school at a healthy weight. Alongside his weight loss, he seemed lethargic and would regularly complain about being tired and unable to walk. I knew something was wrong, but our GP dismissed my worries, saying that he seemed okay, just on the slight side, and was probably tired from starting school. I persisted until she ordered blood tests. A week later, I received a phone call to say that the blood results were back, and I needed to return to the surgery with my son. The first thing our GP did when I walked into the room was to apologize for not taking my concerns seriously. My son's blood test results had come back positive for celiac disease, later confirmed by a biopsy. Celiac disease is an autoimmune condition in which the consumption of gluten causes an immune response in the body and an inability to absorb important nutrients, causing malnutrition. The treatment is a lifelong gluten-free diet. Celiac UK estimate that 1 in 100 people is affected, yet only 1 in 4 is currently diagnosed. My son is now a big, strapping teenager, but back then something inside me kept telling me that his weight was not normal. If you feel that your child may have an underlying problem, please do seek medical advice. Allergies and special eating needs. When a child is younger, handling food allergies and intolerances is relatively simple. But when they reach school age, you not only have to trust others to follow instructions to keep them safe, you also need to trust the child themselves to not eat something they shouldn't. My biggest worry when my son was diagnosed with celiac disease, however, was how he would cope emotionally with the restrictions on his eating and the differences between him and his peers. Children with celiac disease are at significantly greater risk of developing anxiety and eating disorders than their non-celiac peers. While it is possible that there is a physiological cause for this, sharing an etiology with the disease itself, it is impossible to discard the emotional effects of living with a condition that exerts a significant amount of control over which foods are eaten, especially when you consider the implications of feeling socially excluded. Parties, visits to friends' houses, school trips, and special events suddenly presented hurdles that we had never appreciated before. This is true for parents of children not only with celiac disease, but those with food allergies too. In our case, my son's school was ill-equipped to handle his eating needs, and so he was unable to eat school meals. On a day-to-day basis, this was not an issue, since he preferred packed lunches. But it meant he missed out on special meals, such as Christmas lunch. I quickly learned that the best way to help him to feel normal was to provide him with safe food myself. I made him a special Christmas packed lunch, complete with a Christmas cracker, to take to school, and I would send him to parties with a selection of gluten-free party food. Alongside this, we joined our local celiac support group and attended monthly meetings, which helped to normalize his disease and eating needs. Meeting other celiacs and exchanging food tips was an important part of his acceptance of his eating needs. Finally, I spent a lot of time helping him to understand what was happening inside his body, why his needs were different, and what would happen if he did eat gluten. Now, as a teenager, he has full control of his diet, and I have told him that it is his decision if he chooses to eat gluten and that I trust him. To date, he has never purposefully eaten food containing gluten, something his consultant gastroenterologist is continually surprised by, as teenage celiacs usually fall off the wagon after all the years of parental control in childhood. In conclusion, I firmly believe that the best way to handle special eating needs is to help the child to feel in control and as normal as possible. Candy chaos. Sugar is possibly the hottest topic in nutrition now. It is hard to escape any discussion about it, especially when related to childhood obesity. A growing number of parents attempt to avoid processed sugar in their children's diets, and some prohibit all sweets and chocolate completely. Despite this, research shows that children eat significantly more sugar in their school years than compared with toddlers and preschoolers. Sugar consumption also declines as they enter adulthood. So the two questions immediately raised by these findings are what causes the increase in sugar consumption and what can parents do about it? The answer to both questions is one and the same. It is highly likely that the sharp increase in sugar consumption in school-age children is, at least in part, due to its restriction by parents. The way to reduce the sugar obsession? Drop the restrictions and remove the control around its consumption. Most parents look at me in horror when I suggest this to them. Nevertheless, relinquishing control is almost always the best way to handle sugar, sweets, and chocolate. Research has shown that limiting sweets and chocolate has negative consequences, including the development of an increased desire for them, more attention being focused on trying to obtain them, and a tendency to overeat them when the restrictions are removed. Simply, if we want children to be able to control their sugar consumption, we must let them eat it and trust that they will self-regulate. Parental eating habits are important here. If you, as an adult, view cakes, biscuits, chocolate and sweets as special, eating them as a treat, limiting them and referring to them as naughty, then you model this belief to your children, and they will not be able to self-regulate their consumption either. Children need to view all sources of food equally. To eat instinctively, in line with their hunger and satiety levels, children must be allowed to choose what they eat. The minute we impose restrictions, we remove their ability to self-regulate. What should you do if you are already restricting sugar? My firm opinion is that you should relinquish control. The more you restrict, the more difficult it will be for your child to self-regulate when they do eventually eat the forbidden fruit. This, I believe, is why children eat significantly more sugar when they are of school age. What happens when their parents are not around to control their food choices? Of course, they are finally free to choose what they want, and previously forbidden foods are the most appealing. I was raised in a house where pudding was only ever fruit. Cake was for birthdays and Christmas only, and chocolate and sweets were banned, as were sugary drinks. It is no surprise, then, that the moment I was away from my mother, I gorged on all things sugary. I sneaked them into our house and ate them in my bedroom in secret. Sugar became my guilty secret, and guilty secrets are incredibly powerful, especially when they lead to feelings of self-reproach and emotional eating as a result. My mother's motives were well-intentioned. She wanted me to develop healthy eating habits and a stable, healthy weight. Sadly, however, by not keeping sugary foods in the house and restricting them throughout my childhood, the result was the opposite of what she'd intended. I have tried hard to not limit sugar for my own children, in order that they grow up with the ability to self-regulate, unlike me. Despite the very mindful and informed choice behind my actions, I am still astounded when we go grocery shopping and they ask if they can choose something to eat, returning with a banana, some grapes or a bread roll, instead of the chocolate or cake that would always tempt me. Questions from parents. Before I close this chapter, I would like to include some questions from parents of children aged 5 to 12 to draw together some of the information covered here. I hope you will find them useful. Question. My 5-year-old daughter is a very picky eater, and I really struggle to get her to try anything new. She will not eat any fruit, not even in smoothies or juice, and the only vegetables she will touch are peas, raw carrot and sweet corn, but she won't always eat them. She will eat pasta and cheese, potatoes and cheese sandwiches, but only white bread and definitely not butter. She will sometimes eat peanut butter on toast. I was parenting alone and was very anxious when I was weaning her onto solid foods, so didn't just let her play with food and enjoy the process of learning to eat. I was trying to do baby-led weaning, but was really stressed about it, so I think she picked up on that. How can I encourage her to try new things? She freaks out if there's anything she doesn't like even near her. Answer. I think you've hit the nail on the head when you say you feel that you didn't allow your daughter to enjoy the process of learning to eat when she was weaning onto solids. This is likely to have contributed to some of the issues she has with eating now. But the good news is that it is never too late to help her learn. I think you must go back to basics and introduce the sensory side of eating that she missed out on as a baby, as well as including some steps to help familiarize her with food and feel more in control over her eating. My suggestion would be to remove any pressure from the eating process. Initially, you need to accept your daughter and her eating. I would make sure that you offer a safe food at each meal, so there is always something that she likes on her plate. Alongside this, I would introduce a new food or one that she has previously refused, but don't place any pressure on her to try it. If she voices her disdain, then just say, "It's okay, you don't have to eat it if you don't want to." And if she does try it, be sure to not praise her for doing so. You need to keep your responses to her eating neutral, whether you are happy or stressed with her. To help her learn about food and, more importantly, familiarize herself with it, I would consider setting up a fruit and vegetable garden with her. If you have a garden, think about creating a vegetable patch. If not, you can use just a couple of pots on a windowsill or balcony. Visit a garden center together and look at seeds and ask her to choose what you're going to grow. Once home, encourage her to sow the seeds and take care of the plants as they grow. I would also try to take her food shopping with you as often as possible and ask her to get involved in your weekly meal planning, choosing dinners and lunches that you can both eat. She should be involved in meal preparation as much as possible, whether you are using ingredients you bought when shopping together or harvested from your own plants. Encourage her to chop up the ingredients and handle them as much as possible. Try to really get her involved in the cooking process. You could look at cookery books together, selecting recipes you would like to try, making sure the books have photographs of the food, and, even better, photographs of the raw ingredients. All this will help her to get to know different foods, which has been shown to slowly increase the variety of foods accepted and eaten. I would also think about the example that you are setting her. How and what you eat has a tremendous influence on your daughter, so I would focus on eating a wide variety of foods yourself and limiting any picky eating behavior you may have. Finally, try to eat as many meals as possible with your daughter, and to make eating an enjoyable and relaxed experience that you share. Question. My 7-year-old has massive issues with body image. She cries that she is fat, wobbling her legs, and refuses to wear clothes that she thinks she looks fat in, even though she is slim. She has always had issues eating, and has previously been seen by child mental health professionals, who haven't helped. I am looking for any advice you have as to how to deal with this. I'm so scared this is going to be an eating disorder. Answer. Your daughter is not alone. A large percentage of girls, some as young as 6 years old, worry about their weight, especially believing that they are too fat. First, I'm glad you have sought professional medical advice, and I would recommend that you ask for another appointment, perhaps with a different team if you don't have faith in the people you've already seen. There are things you can do to help your daughter yourself, though, in the meantime. Your goal is to try to improve your daughter's body image and self-confidence, and the most important place to start here is with yourself. You must be very careful that she is not picking up on any insecurities that you may have. Ban all talk of dieting in your house. You must try very hard to always speak positively about your own body, and never say anything negative about the way you look in her presence. Similarly, avoid talking about other people's bodies, positively or negatively. Make sure that you never comment on your daughter's appearance. This includes praising her for her looks in any way. Instead, focus on paying her compliments for what she does, the actions she takes, what she says, and things she achieves. Next, you must be very careful about outside influences on your daughter. Keep a close eye on her internet activity, including any videos she may watch online, and make sure that you filter any television she is exposed to exclude any programs or adverts which focus on looking good, sexualizing girls, or showing them achieving anything, including happiness, based on their looks. Be careful about magazines or books that she reads too. I don't recommend any magazines specifically aimed at girls, as these all tend to focus heavily on appearance and being pretty. With books, try to choose some that have a strong heroine who is popular and happy for being kind, brave, sporty, or funny, and remove any that focus on the characters being attractive. Check out www.amightygirl.com for inspiration. You should also be careful about the toys your daughter plays with, especially dolls that have very unrealistic, skinny bodies. You can get dolls that are more realistic and childlike. I would also suggest that you try to encourage your daughter to find a hobby she enjoys and which allows her to meet regularly with like-minded peers. In addition, I would encourage her to find a sporting activity that she likes, perhaps cycling, climbing, tennis, swimming, or a team sport. Make sure that you do not place any emphasis on the sport helping to keep her slim. Instead, focus on the fact that it's fun and will help her body to be strong. When it comes to your daughter's eating, it should always be under her control, free of pressure from you to eat more or to eat more healthily. Again, don't praise her for eating well or reward her for clearing her plate, as this is likely to backfire, causing her to have more anxiety about eating. Question. My son is 11. We recently received a letter from his school informing us that his BMI indicates that he is in the overweight range and he is at risk of becoming obese later in life. We genuinely have never had any worries about his weight. He is healthy, loves sport, and plays in a local football team every weekend. He is tall for his age, but his weight is in proportion to his height. If anything, he is all muscle. There is no fat on him. Despite this, the letter has made us worried. Are we causing him problems? Is he perhaps overweight and we have missed it? Should we put him on a diet? Answer. I wouldn't put your son on a diet, for two reasons. First, he may not actually have a weight problem. And second, diets really don't work. BMI is not a reliable way to assess weight problems. As you say, your son is in proportion, weight and height, and an active boy, full of muscle. There is a strong chance that he doesn't actually have a weight problem. A more reliable way to assess potential weight issues is to look at the child's waist circumference in relation to their height. This gives a good idea of the amount of fat carried and where it is, which is a much more useful measurement than BMI. If you search waist-to-height ratio on the internet, you will find some example calculations and explanations of results. Sadly, this is not a measurement that schools are using at the moment. That said, it is fairly common for parents to miss their own child's weight issues. That is, we tend to think they don't have a problem when they actually do. Even if your son is overweight, though, I would still not recommend that he diets. Restricting food only serves to make children think about it more, and, ultimately, eat more. I would also avoid talking to your son about needing to lose weight, as this could cause him to seek food to palliate his emotions, or put himself on a diet, which will have the same pitfalls as if you were to put him on one. Instead, I would focus on helping your son to self-regulate his eating, by making sure that there are no distractions at mealtimes that could make him overeat, such as eating while watching television or playing on a phone or tablet. Also, try to trust your son if he says he is full or hungry. Don't encourage him to clear his plate, and don't question him if he says he is hungry or restrict snacks. Finally, it sounds as if your son is already active, with his football at the weekends. I would look at ways to increase his activity during the week, though, especially when he has been sitting down at school all day. An easy way to do this is to encourage him to walk or cycle to and from school each day, or find a sports club that trains on weekdays too. The early school years may bring a whole host of new issues concerning childhood eating. However, if you understand their potential impact and work to follow gentle eating principles, there is no reason why they cannot be navigated in a positive way to help children develop a healthy attitude to both eating and their bodies. The work you do at this stage will help you reap the rewards when your child enters their teenage years, when issues tend to be a continuation of those first experienced at a younger age, rather than any that are completely new. The next chapter focuses on exactly this. Chapter 7. Teen Eating, 13 to 18 Years. What are the top eating issues that come to mind when you think about teenagers? The chances are that two of them will involve dieting and junk food addiction, the picky eating of the teen years. It is simply not possible to write a chapter about teen eating without including these. I think it is also important to look at peer pressure and its effect on eating. And given the information in Chapter 1 on sleep and its impact on eating, we cannot ignore the effect of sleep on teenagers, who are known for their late nights and even later mornings, as well as the effect of screen use on sleep and, by extension, on eating. At the end of this chapter, I will focus on taking gentle eating principles into adulthood. We need to consider how to prepare teens for living and thus eating independently, something that many are ill-equipped for in today's society. Let's start with the most pressing issues, though: dieting and junk food. The dangerous world of teen dieting. Dieting becomes increasingly common in the teenage years, especially among girls, who are a lot more likely to want to lose weight than boys. Family, friends, and the media remain the biggest influences on dieting behavior in teens. The strength and type of close family relationships, such as sibling and parental, have an exceptionally powerful effect on teenage girls, with research showing that talk of weight, particularly by mothers, is linked with disordered eating. 45% of teenage girls questioned by researchers reported that their mothers had encouraged them to diet, while those girls whose mothers dieted displayed more extreme weight control behavior than those whose mothers did not. It's not easy growing up in a world where you are bombarded with images of thinness, where plus size is considered to be anything from a size 14 up, US size 10, where fashion models promote size 0, and magazines feature heavily photoshopped images. Our children must contend with the selfie trend, something that we never had ourselves, and social media has undoubtedly played a central role in the rising trend of the healthy living celebrity, with no social network as full of eating inspiration, or the commonly termed thinspiration, as Instagram. With 90% of Instagram users aged under 35, it is arguably the youngest of all social media networks. And research has shown that Instagram has a dark side when it comes to eating motivation, with 49% of users questioned, who follow healthy living and eating-based accounts, displaying symptoms of orthorexia, in stark contrast to the 1% incidence of the condition in the general population. This finding should be a wake-up call to the less-than-positive influence of social media celebrities in the healthy living genre over hundreds of thousands of vulnerable teenage girls. In short, social media, celebrities, and the impact of maternal dieting can cause teenage girls to pursue the thin ideal, resulting in body dissatisfaction, dieting, and unhealthy weight control. Each of these behaviors increases the risk of binging, purging, and other eating disorders. So how do we protect our daughters from the dangers of dieting? Once again, we must begin with ourselves. We must understand our own eating behavior, and we must stop dieting. If we, as parents, diet, we provide our teens with unnatural and unhealthy role models. We need to embrace our bodies, learn to eat more instinctively, and speak positively about ourselves and others. Above all, we must resist the temptation to comment on the bodies of our children, whether they are over, under, or the ideal weight. Next, we cannot ignore the effects of social media. Minimum age requirements should be adhered to. They are there for a reason. My own children are only allowed social media accounts if they add me as a friend and allow me to see everything they post and everybody they follow. I regularly monitor their activity, and if I see anything that alarms me, we discuss it. I believe monitoring is even more important for teen girls on social media, particularly if they involve themselves in the healthy living community. Moving for fun still applies in the teen years. Finding a sport or activity that your child enjoys can help to improve their confidence and body acceptance. Finally, we must work hard to form close and meaningful relationships with our teens. Research has found that teenagers who have good quality, positive relationships with their parents show better weight-related behaviors and fewer eating disorders. Parents who fall into the authoritative parenting style that is part of gentle eating are far more likely to have a close and positive relationship with their children than those who follow the detached, strict, authoritarian parenting that is more in line with popular mainstream advice. Simply put, authoritative parenting protects teenagers from disordered eating. It is a sobering and scary thought that, even in the teenage years, we still hold the most power over our children's behavior. On the flip side, however, this realization is cause for optimism, because it means we can always do something to change things. Junk food addicts. At the opposite end of the disordered eating spectrum to dieting lies the teenage version of picky eating, that of junk food addiction. Where dieting affects significantly more girls than boys, junk food addiction is more common in boys. Research has shown that 97% of teenage boys consume fast food occasionally, and 14% consume it every day. What causes this junk food addiction? The answer is likely a blend of several factors. First, we must consider our own influence as parents. If we regularly eat junk food, then we are teaching our children to do the same. Proximity and availability obviously have an impact too, with research showing that teens are more likely to buy junk food if they pass an outlet to, or on the way home from, school. Advertising and marketing have a big influence on eating behaviour, and our teens are exposed to more of these today than ever before. Research has shown that television marketing of fast food not only improves recognition of the brand, but also influences teen eating behaviour, increasing the disposition towards eating junk food. Social media plays a significant role too, with many sites showing advertising for junk food brands targeted at teens and young adults, resulting in increased levels of engagement with the brands from this age bracket. Finally, there is a distinct link between a teen's ability to regulate their emotions and emotional eating, specifically of junk food. If teens are struggling with difficult emotions and are unable to find a healthy way to channel them, they are more likely to try to bury them in eating. And when they do, they make poor food choices. How do we try to gently steer teens away from junk food addiction? Again, it requires a multifactorial approach. There is no denying that picky eating from earlier in life can have an effect, so the advice already covered in this book for dealing with that still applies. In addition, for teens, we need to spend time speaking to them about the power of advertising and helping them to spot common techniques used by marketers, thus enabling them to make informed choices about the food that they eat. Once again, we must also consider our relationship with our teens. Knowing that emotional eating is more likely to involve junk food, we must help them to develop healthy alternative ways to cope with stress, anxiety, and other uncomfortable emotions. Being open to conversation, whatever the subject, is important when helping teens to feel able to communicate their concerns to us, as their parents. Introducing them to techniques that can help them to regulate their emotions, such as yoga, mindfulness, and meditation, can also be a good plan, and sporting activities can be helpful too. Once again, we also need to look at our own consumption of junk food, remembering that we model eating behaviour to our children. There is one question that is not asked very often concerning teen junk food consumption, but which, to me, seems the most obvious of all. Do so many teens fill up on junk food because they are unable to prepare quick and healthy food themselves, perhaps because nobody has taught them? When you consider that it is mostly boys who fill up on junk food, this idea seems even more pertinent. Preparing for independent living. The teenage years are a bridge between the full dependency of early childhood and the independence that is soon to be found in young adulthood. Many teens, however, are unprepared for independent living. I remember starting university, living away from home for the first time at 18, and noticing how many of my peers were unable to cook even the simplest of meals. The boys seemed to live on a diet of instant noodles, bacon sandwiches, and McDonald's, simply because of their inability to prepare healthier foods. I firmly believe that by the end of their teen years, all children, or young adults as they are then, should be competent not only at cooking, but also meal planning, grocery shopping, and budgeting. Sadly, these subjects are inadequately covered at school. Cookery lessons are scant at best, and not a core part of the national curriculum past the age of 14. Meal planning and budgeting are not covered at all. So if parents do not teach their children these basic life skills, is it any wonder teens are unable to take care of themselves in a healthy way? We must take time to teach our teens, or, preferably, younger children, about meal planning, budgeting, grocery shopping, and cooking at home, because we cannot rely on their formal education to cover these areas. The pressures of fitting in. Pressure from peers and the desire to fit in are another challenge presented in the teenage years, as children become increasingly independent and spend more time eating away from home. Research shows that eating with peers massively distorts how much teenagers eat, with girls eating 33% less food than normal and boys eating 23% more. Teens also eat considerably more unhealthy food in the presence of peers who are doing so. Unsurprisingly, the effects here are stronger for boys than girls. Best friends, in particular, tend to have a matched daily energy intake, exerting the most influence of all. To counteract some of this behaviour, we must empower our teens to embrace their individuality. Indeed, empowerment is one of the tenets of gentle eating. So how do you help teens to feel empowered? It starts earlier in life, when you respect their eating behaviour, trust them to respond to their bodily cues, and accept their likes and dislikes. Your relationship with your teen can, once again, help them to feel confident in themselves and to know their own mind and own body, which can, in turn, allow them to resist the peer pressure around eating. Avoiding teen eating pitfalls. Teens are famed for their quick tempers, sulks, exam stress, burning the midnight oil, and poor sleep habits. Chapter 1 looked at the impact of stress and sleep on our eating, and if we want our teens to develop the healthiest possible relationship with food, we must consider the way they cope with this. Stress. The teenage years are undeniably a stressful period. From puberty and friendship issues, schoolwork, homework, exams and university applications, to clashes with parents, teens have to cope with a level of stress beyond any they have ever dealt with before. So the role of parents here is important. In order to prevent emotional eating, or eating as a way to handle pressure, we need to try to remove as much of it as possible and provide our teens with healthy and proactive ways to cope. Discussing stress and its impact on our bodies is important, as is having a conversation about healthy and unhealthy ways to cope with it. It is a sad reality that teens today need stress management techniques. Even if we manage to remove as much stress as possible from their home life, they still need to cope with school-related pressure, which appears to be on the increase with the ever-changing demands placed on teens to score higher in exams. Giving teens some tools with which to manage their emotions empowers them in such a way that they are better equipped to follow gentle eating principles. Here are some techniques that can work especially well. Listening to a mindfulness or relaxation app downloaded onto their phone or tablet. Practicing gratitude and altruistic behaviour. Volunteering for charity work can give teenagers a real sense of purpose and can help them to appreciate what they have when helping others less fortunate. Finding a new hobby or a new sporting activity, particularly if they feel included as part of a team or group of like-minded individuals. Attending a teen yoga or Pilates class, encouraging them to feel more at one with their bodies, while also taking time out to unwind and relax. Attending a teen activity holiday scheme or retreat. The increase in popularity of teenager retreats is surely testament to the rising levels of stress that so many experience today. Sleep. We know that late nights and insufficient sleep play havoc with ghrelin and leptin levels, ultimately resulting in weight gain. A lack of sleep also affects our immune system, causing more frequent colds and other viruses, and impacts on our cognitive function and academic performance. Research shows that teens today get an average of 7 hours sleep per night, although recommendations are that they get somewhere between 8 and 10. This sleep deficit poses a real danger to teens, their weight, and their overall health and well-being. Parents need to address this with their teens, helping them to avoid the common pitfalls that have a negative impact on sleep. Here are some of the important points to consider regarding sleep hygiene. Research has shown that teens who keep to a parentally set and enforced bedtime have more sleep and less weight gain than those who do not. Avoid exposure to screens, televisions, phones, tablets and computers for at least 1 hour before bed. The light from these devices is known to inhibit the secretion of melatonin, the sleep hormone, thus interfering with the onset of sleep. Restrict video game playing, especially in the evening. The light emitted from the screens poses an issue, but in addition, the stimulation from the games makes it harder for the brain to switch off and rest. Restrict caffeinated drinks, especially in the run-up to bedtime. Keep bedrooms as dark and cool as possible in order to not inhibit the secretion of melatonin, which decreases in the presence of heat as well as light. Follow a good winding down and bedtime routine each evening. Helping teens to keep themselves healthy and empowering them to take more control over their lives in preparation for the increase in independence they will shortly face is perhaps the greatest gift parents can give to their child. Keeping the doors of communication open, giving non-judgmental advice when it is asked for, and providing a reliable base to return to when they are in need are also important. Healthy eating in the teen years requires parents to adopt a holistic approach, which can be summed up by the principles of gentle eating. Let's remind ourselves of the main tenets once more. Gentle eating is mindful, empowering, respectful, authoritative. Gentle eating throughout the teen years focuses very much on shifting the balance of power even more towards the child, in preparation for independent living and adulthood. As ever, parents should be mindful of their actions and how their beliefs impact on their teens, in order to empower them to maintain a good relationship with food and their own bodies. Affording teens control over their eating as much as possible, through an authoritative parenting style, helps them to feel respected. This, in turn, is likely to lead to a good level of self-respect and self-esteem, both of which are a key influence on eating patterns. Questions from parents. Let's close this chapter with questions from two parents concerning their teen's eating behavior. As you listen to them and my responses, think back to the topics we have discussed and how the information can be applied to real-life situations. Question. My 14-year-old son has been a picky eater for as long as I can remember. As a younger child, he would eat a monotonous diet, although it did include most food groups. I tried not to let it bother me, but goaded by well-meaning advice from relatives, I made every mealtime a battle with threats, bribes, hidden food, or lies about ingredients. Over time, I realized this wasn't working and relaxed, including allowing him to eat whatever he wanted from a meal with no comments about 99% of the time. However, he now has an intense mistrust of food, alongside an even more restricted diet. He goes the whole day at school with only an apple and a packet of crisps, then comes home and makes a chocolate spread wrap or hot dog. He generally eats very little of any dinner I make, unless it's one of three trusted meals. He doesn't get ill often, and probably just about gets by with most nutrients right now, but I'm concerned about his long-term health. Is there a way to improve his trust and relationship with food? Will this issue extend into adulthood? Answer. There is a fair amount of information and support for picky eating in early childhood. However, nobody really seems to talk about picky eating in the teen years, even though it is still common, especially among boys. You have already discovered that bribery, reward, and punishment are not the way forward. Relinquishing control over what and how your son eats is definitely the best approach. I would, however, pay a little more attention to what you are offering him. You mention that he has three trusted meals. This is a good start. Each day I would offer dinner that includes at least one trusted and accepted food. Alongside this, I would serve a challenging food, whether that is a new or previously discarded one, and would pay attention to the iron levels in the food offered. I would put no pressure on your son to eat, or even try the food, though. I would discuss nutritional needs with your son, but you must approach this in a very non-judgmental and non-confrontational way. Help him to understand what his body needs to grow and stay healthy, and what happens if he is lacking in certain nutrients, but make sure you do not put any pressure on him to change his eating. It may be that your son would benefit from a vitamin and mineral supplement in the interim, although you should make it clear to him that supplements are not a replacement for eating, and as such, they are not a quick fix. Involve your son in food as much as possible at home. Encourage him to help plan your meals, and most importantly, to help make them. Including him in food preparation and cooking as much as possible will not only help him to feel more at ease with food, but will also get him ready for the coming years when you will no longer be on hand to make his meals for him. I would experiment with different styles of cooking. For instance,